Loyal listeners, if you ever wanted to get an ad-free version of the show, make sure you head over to patreon.com/ndtex. You'll not only get an ad-free version of this show, but some bonus content in the form of national recap pods from Shane and I, as well as at least two, more often than not, bonus posts from yours truly. Again, that is patreon.com/ndtex. And I want to thank new Patreon members for the month, Jordan B. and John. Thank you, and thank everybody else for your continued support. Loyal listeners, if you ever wanted to get a deeper insight into the Notre Dame football program from somebody that lived it as both a player as well as in the inside of the athletic department, we suggest picking up a copy of If These Walls Could Talk, Stories from Notre Dame Fighting Irish Sideline, Locker Room, and Press Box by none other than Reggie Brooks himself. Reggie will dive into everything from his time playing under Lou Holtz all the way up to the experiences of watching Brian Kelly lead today's Fighting Irish. And we are happy to extend a 25% offer off the book just by going to herloyalsons.com/book. Make sure you use the code WALLSND25. That's WALLSND25 when you make your order. Again, head over to herloyalsons.com/book. Use the code WALLSND25 and enjoy a great addition to your Notre Dame football library. Since we are the loyal sons, we'll get them on the run, boys. We got them on the run. Yes, we are the loyal sons. We'll get them on the run, boys. We got them on the run. Well, hello, and welcome to an edition of the HLS podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Ritter. You can call me ND Tex, and as always, you can subscribe to this very happy, joyous show that we're going to give you over on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever the hell you find your podcast at, we'll be there. Join us on Discord. It's a pleasant time there. HerLoyalSons.com/Discord as we all try to work this out. Twitch.tv/HerLoyalSons for the proper way a game should have been coached and played. And then we're at HerLoyalSons.com. With that said, I'll bring in Shane. Shane, should I even ask how you're doing?
Nope. Nope. It's depressing. It's been one of those weekends where nothing goes right and you just kind of wait for it to be over. Although I can't say nothing goes right. Obviously, you know, like everything else aside from football is fine. It's just nothing football went right.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about it more in the national side, but we were real close to this Saturday being my own personal hell because Notre Dame lost. The Aggies got pantsed. Thank God for Bo Nix. Never thought I would say that. But because on top of that, because Michigan won and Southern Cal won, it's just like, what the? No, I want to die. Like, I'm tired of this Saturday. Yeah. So we're going to mix it up a little bit. Usually we open up by talking about the offense because it's a popular topic. It's what we have the most to tear into. What we're going to do is a slow descent into ranty madness for you guys. Mm-hmm. We'd like to start with what worked, and it was mostly on the defense. Now, the defense was not far from perfect, but we're going to mix it up a little bit to kind of – we don't want to bypass the good things that happened in this game and to get it out there just in general. We're going to rant like crazy. This is not to take anything away from Cincinnati. Cincinnati did what good teams do. Notre Dame made a shit ton of mistakes. They cashed in, and they held on just long enough. It's the same thing Notre Dame has done to other teams in the past as well. So, look, hat tip to Cincinnati. We got. They deserve the win. We're not saying that. We just have thoughts. But before we get into those, let's go ahead and start with the defense, Shane. Obviously, there were some things that were not great, but I mean, overall, the defense, they were put into holes. They performed as about as well as you could for the most part. We'll dig into a couple little headaches here and there. But overall, I was fine with what Marcus Freeman did against his former team.
Marcus Freeman was the reason Notre Dame had an opportunity multiple times, including in the second half, to get back in this game and potentially, you know, get even, at least even at the score, maybe give himself a shot to win. It was because of what Marcus Freeman was able to do. Yes, they were down 17-0 at the half. Okay, like, sure. But, I mean, that wasn't Marcus Freeman's doing. That was quarterbacks. You know, that was just the quarterbacks. And I mean, when Marcus Freeman implements the strategy where Isaiah Foskey is literally like breathing down Desmond Ritter's neck every chance he gets, you can tell what he's trying to do is working. And it did. You know, did they get enough sacks? No. I mean, did they get home on enough pressures? Not quite. Did the corners, you know, have lapses? Sure. But I think all said, all considered, and everything that Cincinnati is, I don't think you can fault the defense really for much aside from a couple of blown passes, you know, but, you know, that kind of shit happens in every game. I think Marcus Freeman absolutely had the right game plan. Brian Kelly mentioned it as well before the game that the idea was we have to keep Desmond Ritter in the fucking pocket. We have to make sure that he has to make decisions. And that was correct because multiple times, not only was his throwing motion first and foremost like 15 fucking seconds long, but when he did have to be like when he was challenged to stay in the pocket, those balls were sailing way past receivers' hands on multiple occasions. I would say about half of the time. So the idea was right. It's just that one half of the team failed to live up to their end of the bargain.
I absolutely agree. And there wasn't as much havoc this week within the Marcus Freeman defense, at least on the stat sheet. One sack, but Foskey made it count, and it directly led to Notre Dame points with the strip sack. You could tell Foskey, I mean, if the sim called anything on the defensive side, it was that Foskey was going to be a problem, and he absolutely was. It's just that Ritter did a damn good job of being a fucking little Houdini out there. He was slippery. He escaped pressure. He got rid of the ball in time. Like you said, he's got a long motion, but he knew when it was time to uncork and get rid of it. And again, you tip your hat to him and the performance. There was only 3 total tackles for loss, only 5 QB hurries. But, I mean, Freeman, they kept everything in front of them, and they had really short fields. And short fields that, mind you, didn't turn into touchdowns every single time. And like you said, Shane, that was the only reason Notre Dame really stayed in it. You know, you get, you know, basically 10 points put on the board against you. And really, it was only one drive and one play in particular that really let the offense get points. And of all people, this is probably when I should have actually started to panic, and I didn't. And it was that Kyle Hamilton got beat, and he got beat bad. And it wasn't just, let me rephrase that. He didn't get beat. It was that he recognized way too late where the ball was. He did turn his head around. He didn't totally Gary Gray it. But when he whipped his head around, he realized, oh, shit, that was a pick if I had turned around a second sooner. Because you said it pre-show, Shane. I said it on Twitter, too. Kyle knew it. He's grabbing his head on his way down that he knew he just fucked it up.
Yeah, the wide receiver, unfortunately, and Drew Brees pointed this out, the wide receiver worked his ass. The wide receiver saw that he was eyeballing him his face, right? And essentially saw that the throw was behind him a bit. And so he worked outside until Kyle Hamilton took the commitment step to step and follow him. And then he cut off his route, stepped back, and turned around and caught it on his back shoulder. Kyle Hamilton was too busy following his forward momentum way past the actual play. But that, I mean, it's clear it can happen to the best. It can happen at any time. Right. But you have to, of all things, credit the Cincinnati offense for knowing that, hey, man, they're going to track your eyes as close to the end of the catch as possible. And he said, okay, well, then we're going to use that. We're going to use our eyes to trick the star defenders on this Notre Dame defense. And it worked. And yeah, that was the one big time that Cincinnati on offense. Well, there were 2 other passes to Pierce that were like, why the fuck are these 40-yard passes happening? But that particular one was, I think, when, I don't know, the whole team might have started to feel a little shook. That could be from the beginning, or it could not have ever happened. But it, from my perspective as a viewer, it just seemed like at that point the bleeding was not really going to stop. Not that they were bleeding profusely, but the few wounds that they had opened that were showing to be weaknesses, Cincinnati kept exploiting that shit. And that guy Pierce kept taking those same fucking deep end routes along the sidelines, and it worked on too many occasions. And yeah, like you said, Kyle Hamilton happened to get caught by one too.
Yeah, and what you could really say is that Cincinnati was really patient on offense. Mm-hmm. It was they were very much, and I'm sure some of that had to do with the fact that they were basically in the lead for the entire game once the turnover bonanza started happening. But basically, when all that shit started happening, they're like, okay, let's just stay within ourselves. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Ritter didn't do too much, which is what is a classic mistake that people make. It's like, oh, we got the big win, and then they just force it. Which you can't really say about the other side of the equation for the Irish. There was a lot of forcing it going on. And that's why they were able. They weren't taking needless shots. They weren't giving Kyle Hamilton a chance to redeem himself. They were taking the shots when it made sense. And when they found him, damn, they were open. They were there. I mean, really, the one that Hamilton had was probably the most contested one as far as big plays. But at the end of the day, the defense gave up 14 points, the way I see it. They gave up 14 points. And even, you know, at that point, it's like, okay, they gave up 14 points to a top 10 team. Holy fuck, we should be able to score 20. Like, that for me is the bottom line in this. Even though, like, the other thing that stood out to me, especially on the last touchdown drive for Cincinnati, poor J.D. Bertrand forgot how to set the edge, and he has been nails all season long.
Yeah, but
for that drive,
He took three straight terrible fucking angles, like three in a row.
it was bad to the point to where one of my former managers on Facebook was like, holy shit, we need to bench whoever the hell 27 is. And I'm just like, I don't even know. Like, that is an uncharacteristically bad game for JD. And it was on that one drive. So it was definitely one of those things where it's like, shit, if it's going to go wrong, it's going to go wrong in this game. And when even like a guy that is basically filling in for an injured player, he's filling in for Leofau, who is supposed to be starting, and he's been like, well, fuck it. I'm just going to be nails, and finally it came back to roost. It came back when Notre Dame is trying to come back in the game, but even then, even at that point, Notre Dame still had a shot at it. They weren't completely out of it, so there's headaches, there's things I'm annoyed with, but at the end of the day, and really for the rest of the season, because we're going to have to talk some bigger picture stuff, I was real worried about what Marcus Freeman was doing at FSU, and Brian Kelly, I think, nailed it perfectly. We're also going to talk a little bit about Brian Kelly and his words. This will be a theme, but he said he needs to realize the personnel he's working with and figure it out. You know, more or less, I'm paraphrasing. And he did. Like, credit to Marcus Freeman. You know why he's getting hired. He's earning the paycheck. Yeah, we give up a few big plays here and there. But at the end of the day, he did something we praise Clark Lee for left and right. And that is this man's defense will not give up more than 20 points the majority of the time. And in the time where they needed the most, they did not quit on him. And they did what they needed to do. So I can only be so mad at what the defense pulled out.
Yeah, man. I mean, at this point, It's funny because that theme right at the beginning of the FSU or at the end of the FSU game, the beginning of the season rather, it was like you said, we need to figure out who the fuck our personnel are. We need to use them properly. And it was evident that, you know, the three down fronts and who was running into fucking flats and who was defending in space, all that shit was question marks. What the fuck? Every podcast was starting to sweat like, oh God, like what's Marcus doing? Is something wrong? But like you said, course correction was instantaneous. You know, it was pretty evident that the idea was to just kind of plug and play. And if you're going to experiment, fuck it. Why not FSU? They're 0-4. Let's go crazy, right? But, that whole sequence now, it's ironic. It's ironically flipped. Now it's,
it really is.
Who's your personnel on offense, Chief? Because the defense seems to be doing their job. But, you know, again, we'll get to the offense. But, yeah, it's just so strange to see how in just the five-game span, you know, we've gone from who is Marcus Freeman, who is he using and why, to what the fuck is this quarterback doing? And no, the defense is great. Like it's funny because at the beginning it was definitely the inverse. We were like, we're very content with, you know, Jackson Cohn the third or whatever the fuck his actual formal name. We were all nice and prim and proper. Yes, please bring in the Wisconsin transfer. Yes, this gentleman will surely lead our offense to the promised land. He is a senior. He has experience. But now it's like this guy isn't. He just doesn't have what this offense needs. You know, like what, and I'm not saying because, oh, it needs Drew Pine or it needs Tyler Buchner. It needs an athletic quarterback who can enact an actual RPO. Because Jack is not going to R. He's just going to P. There is no O. Do you understand? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. We'll get into that in a second. I can see you're already chopping at the bit. All right. But before we get into that, because it's going to be like the entire second half of the show.
Before
we get to podcast business, I want to start the ranties, the real ranties.
Yes, yes.
About this whole to-do with, you know, look, I understand, and it's, and I don't know, maybe it seemed to me there was more on Twitter than it needed to be regarding the home field advantage, and it was mostly because of, more than anything, not because of anything that got tweeted at me. I definitely went and engaged a few folks. I had some fun. But basically, it was that Desmond Ridder, this is what it keyed on, and this is why it became a storyline, is that, oh, well, you know, Notre Dame Stadium won't be loud for long. And then some people were, you know, justifiably so. Hey, that ain't exactly like a loud stadium most of the time. To which I'm like, look, yeah, most of the time, but big games, typically, they're there. Now, the problem came when you got the big red of Cincinnati popping, and people that don't know how Notre Dame works with allotment sees the corner of the end zone by the Jumbotron. It's like, holy shit, they took over. Which, no, in actuality, visitors, number one, did not take over. Where there's some definitely some people taking profit on the game and some Cincinnati fans took their once-in-a-lifetime shot to come to Notre Dame? Absolutely. Yep. I'll get to your ass later. But for the most part, and I'm really wondering, because this was a bye game. Like, let's remember what this game started as years ago when it got put on the schedule. It was a bye game for Notre Dame, okay? It was pay Cincinnati. I think they paid $1.3 million for this top 10 matchup, which is, you never have that happen, like, number one. Number two, it wasn't a home and home. We're not playing Cincinnati at their place. So because of that, you give a really fucking huge allotment. And I would not be surprised to find out in some future part of that allotment was for the Cincinnati band, who I don't know how they travel, but in these pandemic days, not a whole lot of bands are really wanting to make the travel. So I don't know if the band was supposed to be there or not, but I do know because we weren't going to have a home gate leg, Cincinnati got a very generous allotment. It is not the kind of allotment you'll see from SC, you'll see from Stanford, you'll see from any other ACC opponent. So that's number one. We gave a very generous allotment, and they bought them, which 100% they should have. That's an easy sell for Cincinnati. It's a BK revenge spot, Freeman revenge spot. I mean, they had this one circled for a long time, and their team's good. Of course they're going to travel. Now, did they sell at the stadium? No. Like, this wasn't Georgia. Georgia, and I was in the stands, and I saw pictures, and I could confirm how bad it looked. Like, that red, oh my God, that was flooded. That was really 50% Georgia fans. That was something fucking unreal. And I hope I never see again. And then there was, like, every beat writer on Twitter saying, oh, you can hear a Let's Go Bearcats coming. I'm like, every okay, fine. Body. The stadium's fucking quiet at this point. Sure. Like, it's during breaks. It's when, you know, the Notre Dame fans are being quiet because they're on offense. And there's a Let's Go Bearcats chant. Like, yeah, you're going to hear it. And guess what? This actually shows the stadium fucking improvements work, because I was surprised you could hear them as clear as you could, because you usually don't hear. You hear the voices, but it's not that loud. And look, I'm not saying Cincinnati fans are like, oh, well, yeah, they're a little quieter and our stadium helped them. But no, like, I'm impressed how that stadium trap sound from that allotment way the fuck up there were able to make that much noise. So hat tip to them. But it's like, guys, what the fuck, man? I mean, what were your thoughts on the quote-unquote takeover, Shane?
Look, I mean, takeover, schmakeover, first of all. This was just visiting fans. And Cincinnati's not that far, you know?
No, it's not. No, fuck, that's why they had so many tickets.
You know what I'm saying? like, just think of the logistics. Like, and then, like, you already said it, man. Like, we don't need to do any more justifying. We don't need to explain this. If you just take 15 fucking seconds to just think through why every Cincinnati fan possible would show up to this. I mean, you need only go through the first two bullet points. Brian Kelly, Notre Dame. The end. Of course they're going to show up. And every podcast, every beat writer that talked about this game ahead of the game made it clear a lot of Cincinnati fans are still super butthurt that Brian Kelly left when he did. Oh, you didn't coach him against Florida. It's like, okay, fine. But there apparently that sat poorly with a ton of Cincinnati fans. I mean,
no, I don't blame them. I mean, look,
exactly.
I mean, that would sit my craw if I was on the other end of it.
And I wouldn't blame them.
The winningest coach of all time at a historical program. God, yeah. And it was the biggest game in their history.
Exactly.
Hell yes, I'd be pissed. And this, look, I mean, hat tip to them, hat tip to the social media team that basically did the jealous. It's like, I finally got back at my ex post. Like, it was funny. I actually
That's
laughed.
Funny.
Pissed off as I was, I still laughed at that. Like, yeah, I get it. Like, that part's fine. I'm glad they came out. It made for a great atmosphere. Notre Dame fans, I want to tip my hat to you because you guys actually fucking wore green. Holy shit. So, yeah, it looked like Christmas out there. That was a funny joke I saw on Twitter. The downside is males of Notre Dame. I don't know how many of you listen to this podcast, okay? I know there's
eat some protein and work out, y'all, because goddamn.
here's something. Shane, when I was a manager and I was on the field, one of the funniest things that I witnessed was, you know, when we do the whole salute thing, you know, the arms go back and forward. Mm-hmm. It was one of those reminders of how white my alma mater is, because when the arms go down, like, it looks like, you know, a normal sea of skin. But when it comes back up, it's like a fucking, like, the old school, like, reflector of the sun. Like, the little metal shade comes out. It is.
Yes.
And I watched it every single time I was on the sideline because I'm like, God, this is the most fucking funny thing ever. It's just blindingly white. So when all the Notre Dame males, when you guys took off your shirts and started, like, going full Petey Pablo, waving around the head like a helicopter and shit.
Yeah.
There was this blimp shot. I am just dying. It brought me right back to those moments on the sidelines. I'm like, holy crap. The sun's reflecting off everybody.
Off of the people. It's like they moved to Indiana because they have camouflage in the snow. Do you understand? Like, fuck. It is, don't do that. Just don't.
It was fine. It was like, just have some self-awareness of what it looks like. Because I called it, I was like, oh, we went from a green out to a white out. And Douglas Farmer, who's been on this show before, and Inside the Irish, said, oh, it's like a Michigan State crowd now for a little go green, go white. I was like, okay, that's fucking funny.
Damn.
So look, there was great. Yeah. Like, Notre Dame fans brought it. They drowned out the Cincinnati fans as well when the opportunity arose. It was a great atmosphere. That was an atmosphere I would have loved to have been in.
So. They were incredibly vocal when Drew Pine came in, and when they took him out for one play, they let everybody know. They were like, "What the fuck are you people doing,
buddy?" Yeah. Oh boy. And it was like, and that was when I made a joke. It's like, oh, the fans are like letting know. I'm like, we're a real quiet bunch, like kind of rubbing it in.
Yeah, man. I mean, if there was ever gonna be a game for the crowd to be like an actual coach on the sideline, I think the three-headed quarterback carousel of a loss to Cincinnati is going to be that fucking game. You know what I mean? Right. Like, I'm not surprised. But, yeah, I mean, to their credit, the fans, great job, you know, bringing the heat, bringing the noise, bringing the energy to a game that warranted that kind of fucking energy. But you selling your tickets and you fucking going quiet as the game, like, don't come the fuck on. You know, Ryan, hit me.
All right, here we go. All right, so here's the thing. I understand there are legitimate reasons to sell your ticket, so this rant isn't coming at you because we're a national fan base, okay? I get that. Sure. There's travel that goes into it. We're still in a fucking pandemic. We all can't go from Ohio or relative like Chicago and the surrounding areas within Indiana to get there with a drive, and it takes a little bit more effort, work, coordination. Doesn't always work out. There are also people that will take the Notre Dame tickets, and basically the way they fund the next season is to sell a game or two. I get, like, totally fine with that. 100% understand it. The problem I have are with the fans that see Notre Dame tickets as its own fucking stock market, like it's some kind of goddamn NFT Bitcoin smashed together all in one, that, oh, I am just waiting for the game like once every few years where this motherfucker's worth $2,000.
Right.
And they sell it without a thought. These are the people that can make the game. These are the people that probably still make a road trip to go see all their friends and go
tailgate. Probably season ticket holders, bro.
Oh, they're absolutely season ticket holders. Again, not like I said, not all. There are people that will fund season tickets. I'm a diehard Texas Rangers fan, y'all. And when they made the World Series, I knew I was going to go to a Notre Dame USC game. I'm like, okay, I'm going to miss two games. This sucks. Yeah. So I gave one to my dad because he had never been to a World Series game in his life because we're Texas Ranger fans. And
clutch.
Yeah. So I did that. And then another game I put on the market and completely funded, you know, made up, you know, past purchases, paid for our next season. So that I get. You people that are using this like a stock market, I fucking hate y'all so much because you're the people that make the stadium, all the bad shit that is talked about, the down in fronts, the people that buddy-buddy up with the ushers who are now told to let people be loud. But no, there's fucking high roller over here that keeps making things a pain in the ass. And Notre Dame, to their credit, has tried to shove their asses up in the fucking suites. Like, you could call Notre Dame, say they sold out to do that. There's a fucking reason for it. They're trying to get those people out of the crowd, way the fuck up in their own ivory tower, so nobody has to deal with their ass. But there are still far too many people around there. And I have sat by them. I sympathize with you. They have, at the time when my wife and I were dating, they talked down to my wife because she got tired of them continuously just trashing the team. Like, 100%. This was the famous Tommy Rees pass interference game. Every other word was, oh, Tommy's a bum. Tommy's a bum. They sat there the whole time like this.
Arms crossed.
Yeah. Arms crossed, just not giving a shit. And then when my wife, now my wife, said something like, I've been in this stadium since before you were born.
I don't give a fuck.
I turned around, I was like, who cares?
Why? Yeah. Also, why? If you don't like it, why are you still here?
I don't understand it. It's like, you know, it's some kind of fucking penance that these people think they have to do, and they're fucking miserable the entire time, and they don't want to be happy about it. Like, if you're going to sell your tickets, just fucking stop buying them. I wish to God you would stop buying the fucking things. Because you see this, it's, like I said, it's a fucking profit. You're playing it like it's the goddamn stock market.
Yeah, they're just flippers. They're just flippers, man.
I hate you so much. Like, go fucking flip a house in a minority neighborhood that's getting gentrified. Go fuck up that neighborhood, too. Like, let's have at least one piece where we can have, like, I enjoy going back there, and it's fucking ruined every time I'm around a bunch of assholes. And I'm lucky that I have Monogram membership because I tend to not be around these assholes. It's rare that I do. And I know everybody else is not that lucky. I have not been yelled at to sit down. I'm older now, so I don't stand up the entire game, but you bet your ass in big plays, I'm there. Even if I'm seated, I'm yelling. Like, I understand things change after you go outside the student section, but man, that part pisses me off beyond belief. The people that are using the team are using a bunch of, like, think about what you're doing. You're using a bunch of 18 to 22 year old kids, most of them minorities, to turn a fucking buck, you pieces of shit.
Bet money they hate NIL too.
Oh, I bet so. I wish there was a way we could do something different with ticket exchanges and stuff. And I know Notre Dame's tried to clean it up, but, you know, there's I know it's never going to stop, but just know I fucking hate you. And on that note, let's take care of some podcast business.
Let's fucking do it.
This is going to be the most interesting home field ad I've ever done. So look, understand, like, if you're going to be so hospitable to make sure you sell your tickets to opposing fans, I went on homefieldapparel.com for you guys. So you people that are selling tickets, how about you sweeten the pot a little bit? I see we have future schedules against some home field apparel teams. Southern Cal, North Carolina, Navy, and Georgia Tech. So you could go ahead and find these incredible designs, like amazing retro designs. Maybe you buy a shirt from yourself since you clearly hate the Irish. So you could get the best in college apparel, the most comfortable hoodies, because, man, it's hoodie season. And I can't wait, because I love every chance I get, I'm wearing my home field hoodie around. Why don't you do yourself a favor and send them to the opposing team as well while you're selling your tickets out there? So go to homefieldapparel.com and look. If you still haven't unsubscribed for this podcast yet and turn it off, you can use code LOYALSONS for your first purchase, because I know you haven't made one yet for Notre Dame gear, you cheap fucks. So go ahead and buy some quality gear. Don't go shop around the clearance section in the bookstore and actually get something worth your while. And maybe, just maybe, you can start to turn things around and realize quality when you see it, like Home Field Apparel and homefieldapparel.com.
Yep. Promo code LOYALSONS of bitches.
So we'll see if they actually do the ad checks there. Okay, let's go ahead. Let's rip the Band-Aid off. Let's talk about this bullshit with the offense.
Please, because for me, it's like an infection at this point. For fuck's sake. Okay, let me just... the obvious. Jack Cohn. Like I mentioned in the first half, we're at the point just 5 games into the season, into his Notre Dame tenure. Just 5 games in, it is already painfully fucking evident. Like, and I mean painful in a literal sense because of the anger and possible TV smashing thing breaking that happened over Saturday. Actual physically painful to watch him play in this fucking offense, man. And it's not just because we don't have faith in him or because he's absolute trash. That's not what I'm trying to say. It's just that this offense and how it's designed or how it's come to be designed through the progression of Brian Kelly's entire 11-year coaching tenure at Notre Dame, from the Tommy Reese's to the occasional Andrew Hendricks to the Everett Golson's to the Brandon Wimbush's to the Ian Books, it's all gone from we can kind of make this guy run if we need to, but he's very bad at it, to we got a runner, 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 right? Like, it's been an option available readily and consistently, and yet 5 games into the season, you're going to tell me that Brian Kelly has yet to figure the fuck out that that does not exist in Jack Cohn's lower half, that that option simply isn't there, and that he's going to wait an entire half and to go down 17 fucking nothing to then even think about Drew Pine, who engineered one of the most incredible sparks and changes in offensive just vibe and energy last week. And you're going to tell me he doesn't even get a look in the first half? Dude, like, yes, in your end game press conference, when you said we didn't do a very good job coaching, you goddamn right. You did a shit job. You did a piece of shit job. Every time they shot over to Drew Pine's face on the bench, you could just see him thinking like, what the fuck? You could just see it in his face. And even Drew Brees was saying like, guys, maybe put in Drew Pine, because every time you put in Tyler Buchner, you're not putting in a package. You're putting in a everybody missed to the quarterback. That's all that's going to happen, because he's not going to pass it. He's just going to hold it. And the one time he passed it, interception. I'm sorry. The first half was such an infuriating display for an 11th year coach to be putting on the fucking field that, yeah, in the second half, we were all happy to see Pine. But by then, it was so bitter and so desperate. It was just like, now we have to beg Drew Pine to engineer a comeback, when in reality, he could have prevented this probably well into the second quarter, maybe the first quarter. I don't know. Yep. That's all I got for now.
For now. Oh, we're just getting started. Yeah, look, this was by beyond one of the dumbest things BK's done in a long time. In a really long time. For a lot of the reasons that Shane said, it's like it's so obviously clear what makes this offense click. And if it's not obviously clear by now, without your eyes, let me give you some fucking numbers. Because when the first drive was a very nice 69-yard drive, stopped by one of the worst passes that I've seen Cohn make. It was a literal, what the fuck are you doing? Take the sack, dude. Which is odd. He only got sacked once. It's like, that's been the problem, is you've been holding onto the ball too long. Oh, now we fixed that. We actually got the second string left tackle. The offensive line does a better job keeping your ass clean. And you still throw a pick? Like, what the fuck, dude? And okay, that was his best drive. Like, let's keep that in mind. So
that was the best one.
Yeah. When Brian Kelly rolls stuff out, if there is one thing that he is so stubborn to a fault on that does drive me insane about a coach I actually like, is that he gets this blind spot, especially for the older guys, the people that he went in all in on. And he basically went all in on Cohn, because this is a transfer and he beat Drew Pine out in camp or whatever. So you don't want that to get like he doesn't want to tear a locker room up again. You can tell he doesn't want a 2016 this shit. He was even kind of, you know, I can't do this flavor of the week thing. Like, he knows it's like, I got to pull the Band-Aid off, like, right the fuck now.
Yeah.
So he knows he's on the precipice of really fucking up his team chemistry. After that 69-yard drive. The second drive, 15 yards. Third and fourth drives were the Buckner disasters. One went for negative 7 yards, and then one went for 3 that ended with an interception. And Cohn comes back out after that 2 drives. All right, so we got 69, which we've said, nice, 15, 24, 15, 5 at the end of half. And that 5-yard drive was what a... This was the 2-minute drill, mind you. The two passes, the first two passes that he threw were to Tyree. They were behind the line of scrimmage. Tyree caught the first one, stumbled forward for 5 yards. Notre Dame has to take a timeout. The second one, Cohn throws it so far behind him, it was goddamn almost a lateral.
Yeah, yeah.
It was nearly a fumble. Tyree thought it was a fumble.
Yeah,
Cincinnati thought it was a fumble. It was really close. That was the second pass in your 2-minute drill. So thankfully, that stops the clock. Third, you stopped the clock too. It didn't matter. It was incomplete because he threw it away. Mm-hmm. Didn't even arm, at that point, arm punt it. You're arm down. Punt. They're not going to score. You know they're going to be content to take this lead into the half. As long as you don't throw a pick 6, you're fine. So just fucking throw it past the sticks. And there was other points to where it was like as soon as the script was done on that first drive, because I mentioned it before, I'm real concerned we're script and then fucked.
Yep.
Because after that point, there was only one other pass that went more than 20 yards, and that went to Avery Davis. It was a little high, but he hit him in stride. It was one of the best passes he had after that first drive, where he had a 20-yard pass and a 10-yard pass. The rest were dinks and dunks, basically.
Yep.
Here's the first drive. 3 yards, negative 3, incomplete, 20, 10, interception. Second drive, 6, 7, incomplete on a pass that wasn't even close to Lindsey. Then Cohn's fifth drive, 11, 10, negative 3 on a swing pass, 9, and that was a 3rd and 13. He threw 9 yards to Avery Davis. I wish I had the all 22, but I saw Lindsey look like he made a
wide
cut.
Open.
Was probably open.
Yeah.
He was afraid to throw that ball. And then on the 6th drive, incomplete. 23 yards. Yay, Avery Davis.
Wow.
Incomplete because the screen was blown up. And look, hat tip, you avoided a sack. You threw it at his feet. Good job.
Yeah, great.
Well done. Great. You got rid of it. It was a play call. It took too long to develop. Did good. Incomplete to Mayer. He short-armed it because he ran up in the pocket and saw a helmet and stopped throwing.
Yep. He stopped his throwing motion and hit the dirt.
And we're going to talk about that little moment a little bit later because I have some other things I want to discuss there. So you have that. He gets sacked finally. And that wasn't his fault. Promoti was just, he got plain beat, got bull rushed, got beat. Cohn would have had to like throw a really stupid pass in order to get rid of that ball. And then you had the 2-minute drill that we talked about. So you see all that and you're still telling me you're not sure that Cohn has done anything to lose his job?
Yeah. I mean,
that,
I think
that injury at Wisconsin was kind of a blessing in disguise, BK. I know you don't want to Wally Pitt people. You did the same shit with Zaire and Kaiser, and you gave Zaire every opportunity to take the job back, and he was making it abundantly clear he wasn't it.
Yeah, he just wasn't it.
And it cost him poorly. And he better not fuck it up again because I am legitimately concerned he might.
Yeah. It's a valid concern, and it's also like, I mean, we remember 2016. We remember the Deshaun Kaiser, Malik Zaire locker room, right? We remember how publicly it was very well known that locker room was half and half.
Yep.
There was no Kaiser, Malik Zaire high five bro team like the choose your fighter tweet that I put out over the weekend of the three QBs yakking it up. No, that shit was not in there. And I know we're not talking about the same thing this year, but when you see just how strongly the team gravitates to and responds to Drew Pine in 2 consecutive weeks. And from what we're told on every podcast, all these off seasons that he's been on the team, they fucking love the guy. When you see all that and you still sit there and say, I'm going to put Jack Cohn out a third time and see what happens, a fourth time and see what happens, a fifth time and see what happens. And it's just the same pants shitting, just not like, you know, he doesn't seem to command the confidence that the practice videos seem to show of him. You know, that stoic face doesn't convey what it seemed, what we wanted to think it was. It doesn't, it's not an actual conveyance of, you know, steely eyed demeanor, confidence, and experience. It's, I don't know. That's how it's starting to feel now. It's starting to feel more like the, I'm just going to do my best and see what happens. And, you know, I'll try to throw it, but, you know, am I going to run? Probably not. Like, now all the things that I see in Jack Cohn are the failures. It's unfortunate because it's not like he's just a failure. It's not like he's terrible, but now all we can see, especially with this loss, all we're able to look at are his deficiencies, and especially as compared to the other two peers with whom he's competing. And that's not to say Tyler Buchner is absolutely better, but you can tell the skill set is there where if you need to, you can actually make the boy throw the fucking ball. He already did it. You know, he definitely nailed that touchdown pass, you know,
right.
But now you put it, every time you put him in against Cincinnati, it's a guaranteed run 6 fucking times in a row, punt. Like, come on.
Yeah, the one time you call a direct non-RPO pass, it gets blown up in your face, and he does a freshman thing. He's like, this is my chance. Shit!
I can time this. I won't get boom hit.
Yeah. Now, let's do the other side of the number, Shane, for Drew Pine, because look, Drew Pine was 9 of 22. Jack Cohn was 14 of 22. And I just listed off some of those things. So, okay, I can see why you want Cohn in there. Better completion percentage. Here's the drives, however, fuckers.
Yeah.
50 yards, ended on downs. 38 yards, got the TD. That was the strip sack. Zero yards. That was the fucking Austin drop that should have been a goddamn touchdown. We'll get to that later. 80 yards for a touchdown, and then finally the desperation 24 yards for the end of the game. Notre Dame got 5 opportunities with the football as opposed to 7. 2 whole less drives, but the same amount that Cohn got, and he's actually able to move the fucking football. Mm-hmm. And to your point, Shane, here's the reason why I think the errors are so glaring for you as far or anybody else that – it's so easy to see where Cohn fucked up, because this time around, we ran the football even when Cohn was in the game.
Amazingly.
84 rushing yards total. Like, but it started to diminish after a while, because whatever was working, it became make Cohn pass the ball. Yep. Let's go ahead and flood it. We'll sell out. We got a good enough secondary to do it. And then all of a sudden, Drew Pine comes in. It's, oh shit, we got to respect options now. He ran like a modified little triple option type play that was just dead sexy. He's all of a sudden the two backs that are in there are now not just like desperation chip blocks. So you keep your quarterback on 2 feet. They're actually used in the offense. We started running. I hope I have the time to do it, because I would love to break down the personnel groupings that we had, because it sure as shit felt like to me that as soon as Drew Pine came in, it was throw all the big bodies out there, baby. We're throwing all the tight ends out there, and we hadn't done that all season. We looked a hell of a lot like last year's team. Not as good on the ground, but as far as the offensive philosophy, the creative play calling, what we were able to do, what we were able to create, it felt a lot more like that, plus not being afraid to throw the ball downfield. And that was the other thing I couldn't believe from Cohn. Yes. It was that, like, all of a sudden –
you can't do it.
You're not throwing the ball downfield. Like, that was the one saving grace we gave Cohn for his shitty completion percentage. He's taking shots. You're not going to make those. Fine. But then he didn't do it. And now you're not making the easy plays, which at that point, why are you fucking in there?
I mean, it's that simple. I mean, it's Drew Pine. Yeah. 9 for 22 versus 14 for 22. Same exact number of passes. Tell me how many points were fucking scored. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Like, that's at the end of the day, that's it. You don't win with fucking completions. You win with points. Like, you have to score more points than the other team, period. And Jack Cohn didn't put any fucking points on the board. He could not engineer a drive with Michael Mayer, with Kyron Williams, with Kevin Austin, with Braden Lindsey, with Avery fucking Davis, with Lorenzo Styles. Like, you're going to tell me, with all this at your disposal, yes, I'm not ignoring the offensive line. Obviously, we're fucking patchworking. We got Joe Alton there just scooting out and putting hands on somebody. Just do what you can. That's fine. But, dude, I mean, at this point, Yeah, the receivers certainly let him down on some occasions. Let everybody fucking down on multiple occasions. But when Cohn was in the game, it was as if Brian Kelly forgot who he was. It was as if he was like, well, today versus Cincinnati, we're starting freshman Tommy Rees. So you're going to do nothing over 9 yards. Good luck.
Really felt like that.
That's and essentially that how it felt.
I know that wasn't the playbook, and it really makes me wonder how healthy Cohn was the whole time, because again, the adjustments were made, and I know a lot of people justifiably pissed the O-line, but here's the thing, the O-line did just fine, y'all. If you want to fucking fire Quinn after this, like, I don't know what you want to do, because they are taking a line, which all the really good talent, this is a transitional year for them, they're all too young. The one that was able to start, it needs a fucking bionic knee right now. So all those buyouts you're negotiating in your head for Quinn, figure out how to find an investment to those like Boston Robotic guys that got the fucking robotic dogs. Figure out how to put some of that shit in his knee so we can get him back on the field. Because that's how you make this line a hell of a lot better real quick. But that aside, there were only 2 sacks, and those were against Cohn on a flat beat. And then Tyler Buckner, who basically the Cincinnati's like passing down, blitz everyone.
Of course.
And I don't care who you have on the line. Buckner needs to figure it out quick. And at that point, he should have just taken the sack. But basically, you have that. And the amount of QB hurries, this is the one, Shane, that blew my mind. Four total QB hurries where it felt like there was a ticking time bomb behind the line every single time. 4 QB hurries. That's it. The offensive line did just fine.
And yet, still, this was how the quarterback play resulted. Okay.
And it's inexcusable at this point. The excuses are gone now. You're getting rid of the ball quick, / the offensive line is doing their job. They're now having the normal amount of, well, shit, we gave up something to a bad defense. This defense is really good. The pass rush isn't incredible, but those DBs create so many sacks for the Cincinnati defense.
Dude, those DBs. Funny. Those DBs are possibly the best set of DBs Notre Dame's going to play all fucking season. Like, it was incredible.
Bar none. And they were breaking up passes. They were playing just damn good football. I mean, there's nothing else to it.
And I mean, I feel like we would be doing a disrespect not to just shout out. I mean, out of respect to Sauce Gardner, that motherfucker is insane. He is legit as fuck.
He is. He is absolutely legit.
Mad respect.
You have all that going. Like, you had one problem fixed, you could have fixed the other very, very simply, and a lot sooner than what you did. And when they were, poor Buckner, like you said, when they ran him out.
They set him, they set him up for failure. All of them.
And it was for one play, and I was convinced, I was like, I wonder if BK was using it like a free timeout. Hey, Tyler, go do this running play that'll be super obvious, that won't go anywhere. I gotta tell Drew something real quick. Because if that isn't the reason, I don't know what you're doing, because it basically shot all momentum. And that was the first drive, mind you, that ended on downs.
Yeah.
And it shot all the momentum dead in the foot. So that was another one where you made the right decision. Let the guy just let him go, man.
Yeah, just let him do it. Just let him fucking do it. Just let him do it. I'm certain we're all going to laugh one day and be like, man, Tyler Buckner, wow, what an incredible QB of the future. That Cincinnati game was just like a, you know, they set him up. I'm sure one day he will evolve like a fucking Pokemon and be incredible. Just sure. But today, right now, our best option is Drew Pine. I'm not a quarterback coach. I'm not a fucking anything coach. I've never coached football in my fucking life. All I've ever done was beat a couple people in NCAA 14 online and have like a 202-50 record. Big fucking whoop. That's the extent of my football knowledge. And even then, it was so just like, even my wife was like, where's that 10 guy? My wife doesn't watch football. She was like, where's the 10 guy? He was good.
You cannot get to the point where you have everybody in the booth actively calling for a quarterback change. When that has happened, you have lost the plot. Yep. And before he left the field, because I think that's when we got the halftime quotes that Jack was still our quarterback. Mm-hmm. I think he did that going into the locker room, because if he gave that answer coming out of the locker room, one, hilarious. Two, I ain't buying it.
Two lies.
just straight up lie. And that's bigger than any lie BK has done so far. Which, to get to that point, if we're going to hold him to something, with the NBC cameras did there, and he said, if you do not basically, let me translate it into football speak into what NBC couldn't air. If you motherfuckers keep playing like dog shit, I'm benching you. Because what happened to Kevin Austin as soon as he fucked that pass up? Freshman.
Gone.
God, I'm hitting my mic now. Freshmen are in.
Yep.
And guess what? They made plays.
Yeah.
And you know, as soon as that happened, I guarantee you, BK just took a side eye at Austin like, see? He
you
can
see?
Do it.
Yeah. Did you see how he did that?
I'm fucking around anymore. And I really hope that's the attitude he comes with. Because at the end of the day, BK and his words, he's super measured with them. You got to remember, this is a politician's kid, man. And he knows how to work everybody.
He's also been there for 11 years, so he knows what he's doing.
He knows how to work the beat. And not that the beat's doing a bad job. It's that BK has figured out how to answer questions and not get the follow-up because it seems like he answered it completely. Because after a certain time, you know, you give the answer, even if there's a follow-up, BK's like, I already, you know, the same answer. I already gave it to you. Like, he knows when you have a complete answer. Because the favorite message board, you know, discussion, text message thing among friends is, man, if I was on the beat, I would make sure to get the answers out of BK. Like, yeah, I like to see you try. Not that he won't call on you. He'll call on you. He'll give you the answer. You'll be like, okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but I also trust professional journalists.
Yeah. they're not in the business of getting their wool pulled over their eyes because they eventually find out shit later and then they report it. What's happened, and they have even mentioned it too. But the thing is, the answers that BK are giving this season like seem to only make sense in totality, like 2 weeks down the road. Great example, Tyler Buchner and his hammy injury. He mentioned that, hey, we like how he's progressing. His top speed on the GPS is looking good. Oh, okay. We track players and practice on GPS. Then when he doesn't play, you're like, huh, that's weird. I thought he was at top speed. And then when he gives the answer the following week that, yeah, he's actually taking snaps and rotations, which you'd remember, it's like, oh, shit, he never said he wasn't playing snaps.
Correct.
Yep. Because he's assuming you're not going to answer the question. Because just because he had a top speed in GPS didn't mean he was running anything that was the fucking offense. He could have been doing it in goddamn sprints on the sidelines. It could have been a blip on the radar. He could have taken one snap. It's like, yeah, I don't feel good. And they looked at the numbers like, well, let's not push it. He's hitting top speed. And if he's right there, let's not push it. So you have all these things going on. And like the injuries that are starting to happen, like Mayer comes up limp with the groin, right?
Oh, man, when they kept playing him after the fucking, oh, my God, I was hot
too. And then when BK gave the answers, like, he's been battling that all season. You're like, what the fuck? So now you know why they left him out there, because they're like, okay, we got to trust him. He says he's fine. You know, he hasn't torn anything yet, we hope. And then when you get the answer, you're like, oh, wow. And then when he gave the answer, that's when the light bulb went in my head. It's like, okay, how many people are being held together by like spit and gum and duct tape right now? Because all this
Jack Cohn
is number one in my mind. Not just like, I mean, there's parts where you get injured and you tense up, like the helmet thing. But ever since he had to get that finger popped back into place, man, his accuracy has just taken a nosedive.
His footwork has gotten so fucking antsy since the finger dislocation. Even in the next pass, yes, it was a touchdown. It was amazing. But he threw it off of his front foot leaning forward, like he was skipping into the pass. It was, like, fundamentally, NFL scouts probably rolling their fucking head.
That's an adrenaline play. That's all that was. That was a pure fucking adrenaline play. Because ever since then, he's looked like ass. And then at the Wisconsin game, you're like, there's no way he's 100%. And boy, he sure didn't look it, because he never looked comfortable. Like Shane said, his footwork didn't look comfortable. When he was missing passes, he missed one pass so bad on that first drive to Avery Davis. It was the first incompletion. Go back and watch it. Mm-hmm. He damn near threw it right to the defender's hands. He missed Davis that bad. And I have other marks. Yeah.
The defender just wasn't expecting it to be so bad.
Everything was like, I got marks of high. Wasn't even close. God, that was slightly underthrown. Could have been worse. Like, the maybe could have been DPI to Mayer. He underthrew that one, and you could tell. Mm-hmm. I'm going to loft a 50-50 ball to the guy I know Cincinnati can't cover, because you knew that game plan was Mayer focused, but he couldn't get it to a 50-50 spot. And because he couldn't get it to a 50-50 spot, they didn't get the DPI flag. All these things fucking matter. And I know BK, he's trying hard, man. He's trying real hard, but there's all these little things that start happening. Heinisch gets knocked out with a concussion. He's through protocol, yet he's still not playing. Tosh Baker, all of a sudden, isn't playing, which makes me wonder, how long was he playing hurt? And I'm not... Yep.
Carmody.
Yeah. How healthy is he? Did he go into the game? And he looked a hell of a lot better. Like, 100%. He looked solid.
He looked a hell of a lot better, but he was quickly replaced by Joe Alt. That's what I'm saying.
So that's what I'm trying to figure out right now. And I'm not saying, and let's not get it twisted, I am not saying this coaching staff are putting kids in a position where they're going to hurt themselves because it felt like it with Mayer. And then when you got that answer, you figured it out because eventually they saved him from himself. Like, no, we can't. Like, you're toughing it out. You're, like BK said, you're a warrior, but no, we need you for the rest of the season. Please sit down. And in sports, athletes do stupid things. And what I mean by that is you are so focused on what you're doing. You do not want to be taken out when you've earned a spot or get a chance at your shot. You are going to fight through some of the worst pain in your life, and you are not going to give two shits about the long-term effects of it because you are in the moment. I did the same goddamn thing, and it was real funny because my wife was asking me to put my right hand out flat because she was trying to hand me something. She's like, what are you doing? Put it flat. And I realized I can't turn my right hand flat anymore. I'm like, that's old pitching. Really? Like literally, I mean, a podcast medium. Oh, wow. This hurts doing this. This fucking hurts.
He's essentially cupping his hand upwards because I
threw so long, and when I shouldn't have, I have fucked up tendons. Mm-hmm. There was a long time, and I've told stories before where I couldn't extend my arm flat, which I can do now. But when I was in high school, it was like barely past a 45-degree angle because of how I was tearing my arm up pitching. And I got used to it. My mechanics weren't awful. My coaches didn't know I was hurt because I didn't know I was hurt. But that's the stuff that happens. Like, ask old football players how their body, and they're like, oh, shit, shouldn't have done that. I got weird aches and pains now the older I get that I'm like, is this just me getting older or is this just me being a fucking idiot? Like, from way back in the day.
I mean, but it's like you said, it's not, we're not insinuating that the coaching staff is doing anything irresponsible here. If anything, the coaching staff was the reason why Michael Mayer is still able to play, for the rest of the season. Because what's happening is what Ryan's alluding to, is that sometimes a player is just like, I don't give a shit. Like, I felt worse, or I've been deemed a partner. Or
it feels quitting. It's just what you're... mentality is, and I know we're getting past it, we're being safer, but that's the truth, man. It ain't going away, ever.
Yeah, and I mean, like, Michael Mayer, his situation was so plainly evident and, like, just so, obvious that he was struggling that you were just sitting there like, it's going to tear. It's going to tear. Oh, my fucking God, it's going to tear. And then he goes out there again, and as he's finishing the route to the sideline, he's hobbling on his way out, and you're like, why is he still in the game? Why is he still in the game? But, like, Joe Wilkins, for example, earlier, he catches one pass, right? He runs across the sideline. DB hits him in the thigh pads, and he just walks out. He's like, I'm fucking out of this, man. This shit sucked. He did the right thing. He got up, said, shit, I can't even step on this leg.
And you're wondering, was there something lingering with him too? I mean, everything's up in the air right now. And I know in the conversation of Discord, somebody asked, it's like, do you think BK's obscuring things? Like, no, nobody's asking if Joe Wilkins is hurt because you're going after the known, commodities of, being, he's very careful of who is publicly released that isn't available or whatnot on the depth chart. Like, he's very smart about how he manages it because you don't have to disclose shit in college. And Notre Dame is like, and you can tell he's different this season because he needs every advantage. He doesn't want people knowing who's hurt, especially if you have a patchwork offensive line. Like we've said, Kane Madden looks like shit half the time. if he's battling something, you really think BK is going to say, yeah, Kane's battling like an ankle sprain that he's playing through right now. You know what's going to happen? Every last blitz is going to end up blowing his gap up. You can't do that.
Through him.
And yeah. So he's trying to protect his team. He's trying to protect his players. That is what I'm hoping when he said Cone didn't do anything to lose his job. And we're all, but I have eyes. What are you talking about? I'm wondering if that's him just sticking up for him. It's like, you guys have no idea what this dude is playing through right now. And I think him injured might be better than the fully healthy Pine. I think it's dumb. I think it's stupid. I think this game proved it. But I think that's where his head's at. And I think that's why he had the comments he did after the game. Because it's real clear he's not afraid to yank people out for poor performance. Again, ask Kevin Austin how he's doing today.
Can I just take a second? Fucking Kevin Austin, dude. What the fuck? Okay, moment over. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if what you're saying is true. And we're all looking at the most recent result, right? We're looking at the what have they done for us lately, even though they're not doing anything for us. But that's the way we're consuming the sport, right? That's why we're consuming the product. So we're definitely sitting there saying, like, we all see it from the outside and say it's evident to us that Cone is on the downslope. He's not progressing upwards, he's progressing down. Whereas I'm certain because BK is so close, so invested, so much time, so much practice, so much everything, it's never going to be that simple for him. I guarantee you, we're going to sit here and podcast all week. You're going to be saying, like, there has to be something figured out. And Brian Kelly had that quote where he's like, we can't be doing this for the rest of the blah, blah, blah. We need to figure it out now. And they're going to take that and hope that that extrapolates into a decision that makes sense, a.k.a. Right. Drew Pine. But I don't think that's fair to assume. I think it's most likely that next week they trot out fucking Jack Cone as a starter. Not for any other reason other than Brian Kelly believes that that consistency is more valuable than the spark Drew Pine might or might not create.
And at this point, it may very well be that Cone's issues are not physical. It is completely mental right now. And then he doesn't have the same mental blocks in practice that he has during the games. That happens too. I mean, that is just the life of being an athlete. And at that point, you know, he's like, look, and again, you're not at practice every day. There was so much shit I remember seeing at practice and would laugh at hearing, like overhearing people talking at the dining hall and stuff, like knowing that they heard some inside source at fucking NDN or on, you know, Blue Gold or other message boards. Like it wasn't isolated to one board. It's like, oh, well, I heard this and they'd ask me about it. I'm like, I ain't telling you shit. Like, one, I don't want to lose my job as a manager. Two, you're so fucking far off. It's too damn funny to me, and I want to hear what other bullshit you've heard, because it's not even close.
Yeah, I would love to hear your conclusions.
We have no idea what we see day to day. Drew Pine may practice like absolute dog shit, and he just works hard, and he looks like ass, but he gets in the game, and it's one of those things where BK's floored. It's like, why can't he do this like fucking Tuesday through Thursday? It would make my life so much easier. I could make this decision.
Sure.
And then on the flip side, he might be looking at Cone and saying, why can't he do the shit on Saturday I'm seeing Tuesday through Thursday, man? None of this makes sense to me. Yeah. All these things are on the table. We may have people hurt that we don't know are being hurt. But the fact of the matter is, and I said last week, I had a lot of moments of Notre Dame, here's where you're at right now. Where Notre Dame, here's where you're at, and here's a bit of little pull back off the edge. I'll give you a bit of silver lining. Where you're at right now is we have no idea how fucked up things are on the inside, yet somehow this team is fucking 4-1. Their only loss is to a top 10 team. We're going to talk about a whole lot of other blood that happened this week against people not nearly as good as Cincinnati that people lost to. And somehow this team keeps finding ways to win. Somehow this team isn't tearing apart at the seams right now because of a quarterback controversy. Somehow people aren't being, because now like playing time is, might as well be all the way wide open now for everybody after you have a performance like that. Because the first half fucking stunk just all the way around. It was bad.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we didn't even talk about Chris Tyree's fumble, man. That was brutal. That cost points, and that gave Cincinnati back-to-back drives. You can't have that shit happen.
Yeah.
So Notre Dame basically spots a good team 10 points. They give up a touchdown. Yeah. Now you're down 17-0, and still Notre Dame's fighting against the top 10 team. Guys, this is a good football team. Luke Fickell, when he put y'all over and said that, man, that was a top 5 team we played, I don't think he's bullshitting. as many issues as this team has, this team is one of the better teams in the nation right now. And some of that has to do with the fact the rest of the nation might suck, but you only can play with what's in front of you. You can only play with how everybody else is playing. And as of right now, Notre Dame, if they can put it together, they're going to be just fine the rest of the way. Every game on the schedule is fucking winnable. And I'm not just saying that because I'm wearing blue and gold glasses or like, oh, well, you know, we're just going to win them all and it'll be fine. Like, every game is fucking winnable. I don't know if the playoffs are in your future anymore. Quite frankly, after watching Alabama and Georgia play last week, I don't want them.
I don't want them anywhere near.
You know,
because the red of Alabama and Georgia will just become blood coming out of Notre Dame. You understand?
At this point, I'm perfectly fine with the New Year's Six Bowl. I'm not moving the goalposts back. I'm just saying, for me personally, how I would like to end this podcast, this website, is to kind of go out like that. But the bottom line is, because people are, what's the big picture now? Here's the big picture. You beat Virginia Tech, then you take a bye, then you go fucking, you know, beat SC. Like, you win every other game on your schedule.
If anybody
thinks for a second, the thought has gone in BK's mind that I might as well rip the Band-Aid off, start Tyler Buchner just to protect next year, you're out of your goddamn mind, okay? And I'm not trying to say this to insult you. No. I'm saying you're thinking unlike how the rest of college football works. You do not punt a season, ever. Not in this sport. Nope, you punt a season. You tell all your recruits you're not serious about winning. You see decommits out the wazoo. You have a shitty...
You end up like UConn.
Oh, God. Hope not that bad.
You end up like UConn. So that's what they did last season. They punted.
Yeah, they didn't play. And then you can't recruit. You can't bring people there. But basically, you got to show you have a commitment to winning. You have to do it. And you cannot go into people's living room and said, we're here to win national titles. And then you lose one tough game. You're like, oh, God, this is too much for us. Oh,
no, we're here. We're here for the Sugar Bowl. Yeah. I'm sorry, everyone.
New Year's Six, like, that'd be nice if we end up 10-2 and get to New Year's Six. But what really...
Hit me up, Cheez-It Bowl.
What we really got to do is get this young guy some reps. So next year we'll be fine. There isn't a soul in the world that's going to sit there like, I ain't signing up for that, Chief. Especially at the level Notre Dame wants to recruit to. You can get some people recruiting like that, but you're not going to get what Notre Dame aspires to. Sorry, it ain't going to happen. So take that thought. Take it out of your mind. They're protecting Buchner. They need to keep protecting Buchner. And quite honestly, if they play Drew Pine, you kind of remove the need to just shove Buchner in there and get him hurt again. Because remember,
exactly,
he's had an injury before. Let's not fuck him up, please. Let's not Christ him, for the love of God.
Just think about how stupid it sounds to be like, I could play Jack Cohn to throw passes and Tyler Buchner to do fun runs. Or I could just play Drew Pine. We could do both. Like, how fucking stupid does that sound?
That's where we're at.
We have to put in a package for a freshman that runs five distinct plays. That's it. Whereas we have a quarterback on the bench whose name is Pine that can actually do the thing. Like, this is just reiterating everything that we've said at this point. But yes, I mean, there's no logical reason to be sitting there saying, oh, well, you might as well just defer to Buchner and give the star of the future what he wants or what we think he wants. That's not going to happen.
I think it's what he wants.
What's going to happen is he just wants to win.
I
agree with you. In fact, should we all remind everybody that Buchner didn't fucking play at all for like 2 years? Yeah. Like, he's probably just relishing the fact that he gets to remember how the sport fucking works.
COVID, this season. The fact he's doing anything positive, like, this was the first game. And he had very limited plays, obviously, but this was the first game where shit looked too fast for him, and he was just like deer in a fucking headlights. Because Cincinnati said, he's in, hit him. Everybody, just hit him. Fuck it. Yeah. Hit him. Yeah. And it ended badly. And there you go.
Yeah. But I mean, again, that makes sense. But yes, I mean, we're looking at a trajectory where 11-1, fuck, 10-2.
And that's what most people had. Reasonable. Those were the most positive projections for 10-2.
Exactly what I was going to say. The reasonable projections and expectations from everybody on the beat and everybody that's looked at this team all throughout training camp and spring ball had them all saying, maybe 10-2, maybe 11-1. You get like your Tim O'Malley's, who are nice rah-rah guys that really take the next win up and maybe go one higher. But like 9-3 and 11-1 was the range this whole time. Nobody, I don't think anybody, was sitting there saying, here come the playoffs.
I mean,
can't wait.
Yeah,
nobody.
Like when we went through the schedule, we said like Notre Dame is just as talented, if not more so, than everybody on the schedule.
Yes.
But we knew there were so many question marks. So you knew losses were probably going to come somewhere. Yeah. When I did the futures pick with Eddie, I was real close because it was the last time I could do those things. I was real close saying, fuck it, I'll put ND there because it's not out of the realm of possibility they sneak into the playoffs. But even I was like, you know what?
Right.
It ain't going to happen. They're going to lose one, maybe two games. So at the end of the day, if we go through a season and your loss is to a good Cincinnati team, a game that you know, should we have won? Absolutely. Don't get me wrong. That was a winnable game.
Yeah.
But you know what happened? You fucked up. You straight up fucked up.
Yeah.
And Cincinnati didn't.
You fucked up three times. Pretty big.
Yeah. And again, Cincinnati didn't. They were patient. They did what a good team does. And now they got easy streak the rest of their schedule, man. And they got.
Yeah. And I'm honestly, like, I'm happy in a way because now everybody else in the national media has to root for Notre Dame to make sure Cincinnati's win is still viable enough to get them into the top four.
I did not even think about that. You're going to have everybody that wanted the group of five. And once again, Notre Dame here is here to save the day.
Welcome to Notre Dame fandom, bitches.
Team Chaos is here. All right. Well, Shane, I think we've ranted or raved about enough.
Yeah, it's time to put it to bed, man. Time to put it to bed and move on to Virginia Tech.
Let's do that. All right. Well, it's gone. We'll be back, y'all. We will have picks on Wednesday. We will have a sim on Thursday over at twitch.tv/LittleSuns. Make sure you subscribe to this podcast over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you have to get your podcast feeds at. Come on and join us over in Discord and commiserate with us over at hurlittlesuns.com/Discord. And of course, you can always find us at our home at hurlittlesuns.com. Sun still rises, y'all. Let's win the rest of them. Go Irish, beat Hokies. Have a good one.